Hi, this is the Archives Task Force, Bonnie Simmons Chair. Also in attendance right now, Melinda Iredone, Brian DeShazer, Addie Gevins, and Don. And am I missing anybody? I don't think so. I think that we have a small but wonderful group. Brian, why don't we begin to discuss it?
Okay, let's see, where do we start? We want to start with the Pacifica National Board meeting in Berkeley this week, in fact, in 2 days. We want to sort of like determine what we want to bring before the board, whether it's motion or information. And I believe Don White wants to be recognized now to talk about an idea.
Take it away, Don.
Well, thank you very much. You know, as a director of the Pacifica National Board, I was in the PNB meeting about four PNB meetings ago. It was held in Walnut Creek, very close to our venue this coming weekend. And the board and the leadership was shown by three board members carrying this motion, and the rest of us behind the scenes had pledged support to it. It actually appropriated a total of $150,000 that was put together by stations being, what is the word I'm trying to say? Stations being
assessed,
thank you, being assessed, and the foundation also putting in a certain amount of money. And this was motivated largely by the real concern on the Pacifica National Board over the preservation of this treasure that we're all talking about at this meeting, the archives of Pacifica that go back over 50 years. And we're aware that much of the archives is not being preserved appropriately, not because we don't have the talented and dedicated people to do it, but because the funding it takes to do it in a very professional and careful way. So that meeting appropriated, through a combined assessment and pledge program, $150,000, only $9,000 of which has actually been spent. And the question I'm bringing to the committee tonight is that in Berkeley this weekend, should we revisit that $150,000, which is now like $141,000, I guess, and make sure that it can be used by our archive staff in the ways that they think are most appropriate. It should not be limited to preservation if people think that's only hiring someone to do that professional work. I think it should be used also for buying the equipment that needs to be done, buying the tapes that need to be used or whatever it takes to digitize these tapes. So what I'm putting before this committee is, what should we bring to the PNB this weekend to make sure that the $141,000 is used as quickly? Now, does that make sense?
I think so. May I jump in for a second?
Yes.
I'm not sure of the actual wording of what was passed at that meeting. I didn't understand that there were necessarily limitations on the way that was parceled out in order to get, if the end result was getting tapes restored. And do I misunderstand it that what the next step would have been, if it had been warranted, was that to get an assessment and an idea of how it might be organized? What I guess I'm concerned with is, and I think that this is what you had said earlier, Brian, was that in putting this together, you also have to think about how it's going to be staffed.
Right.
And
what are resources?
What your resources are as far as in-house staffing, or what could be done if it were being done out of house. And I don't know how you would go forward without having that pretty serious assessment.
you know, Addie Gevins here, archive consultant. You know, the situation is that if this money is real, then we need to put together a work plan, and putting together that work plan actually, of course, consumes a lot of resources, you know, from the archive staff, which is very small. So, you know, what we need to know, you know, it's sort of like putting together another huge grant proposal. So it's not, you know, it's not the most ultimately difficult thing. It's just whether or not it's real enough to really take everybody off task. For example, from now through the national fundraiser at the end of November, there isn't any time to take anybody off task. You know, so I don't think it would be possible, you know, between this and putting together the annual budget and that kind of stuff, let alone doing the grant work that's actually in pocket now, I don't think it would be possible to do that planning until, when do you think, Brian, like early spring? When does the Grammy kick in March?
The Grammy kicks in this week, October 1st. Surprise. Actually, that's a good thing. We sound like we don't want it, but we are fortunate to be awarded a two-year grant from the Grammy Foundation, which begins October 1st, next week.
And actually, folks, we're ahead of schedule on completing the work for our NEA preservation grant, which
ends in February.
Yes, we deserve applause for that.
clap.
And so we're relatively free enough to really be able to engage all of our resources in the fundraiser and in supporting the stations in the station fundraisers. So what do you think, Brian? We're talking about like February or something?
But let me sort of go back to Don's point about the motion being passed. You know, one thing that we have to sort of talk about too, is that the Finance Committee didn't get to review that motion before it went to the full board. It sort of came out of the blue. So Finance Committee really did have, you know, something to say about that, because stations and the LSBs basically are being told by the board that $25,000 was going to come out of the budget somewhere, and they're not telling them where it's coming from, but... You know what? There was like a little kerfuffle about it, and we have to be mindful that I as the director don't feel comfortable with going to the board and saying I want my $115,000 because I know, one, that the foundation would be impacted terribly by it, and individually the stations would be impacted terribly by it. Mm-hmm. So until we so with that in mind, you know, of me saying thanks for the $150, no thanks, that's not what I want to say. What I do want to say is that with the resources that we have and the need that we have, we can fold in that kind of money to make sure that we have the proper equipment, that we can meet quotas of tape preservation and keep a nice pace and keep something that's predictable for the foundation to really be able to handle.
Alonzo Brown.
Hi, Alonzo.
Welcome.
Hello. So with that, if you're understanding what we did, you know, when it was in my lap to take back to the board a program or a work plan, as Eddie was saying, something to tell them what the money was going to be spent on, we really did do that in a way already, Eddie. When you said, when's the earliest? We did it a few weeks ago when we went to national office.
Right.
We, you know, with Greg Guma, with Lonnie Hicks, with Phil Osegueda, Addie Gevins, and myself, we had, you know, a good three-hour meeting of where's the best bang for our buck from our resources. You know, right now our funding, our revenue sources are in our on-air fund drive. We know that we should be investing in major donorship. We have the major donors, we have the materials, we have some of the expertise, but, you know, we need that extra person or the extra coaching to allow us to actually connect with our major donors, and we can get a bigger bang for that. So we sort of have laid out a number of categories. This is a really good thing. Categories where money from this halfway made motion, if you will, could be filtered into under the discretion of the PRA director and the CFO and our grant coordinator, Addie. So it would be sort of a checks and balances of a three-party national office, an archives preservation consultant, and a director helping filter funds that the board wants us to have, thank you very much, but filtered into the right categories that really aren't the black hole categories. Does that make sense to everybody?
Makes sense to me, Brian.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So I think that what you were saying, Don, by sort of opening the door to let the funds be used for equipment and other things that might make the tape preservation possible, I think that's what I'm trying to talk about. Like, if we could put a little bit more money into a consultant for major donorship,
right,
that would pay off next year in a larger revenue stream, which should then sort of off-balance that stuff. We want to be able to go get funds that don't compete with station fundraising. Our on-air fund drive, we only did one day this year so far, one because we don't have the resources to do a two-day fund drive. But it's not because we don't need the money that we would be making with a two-day fund drive. We're lowering our income to give me the opportunity to sort of work those other funding categories. But right now the finances at the foundation are in a desperate, situation. So we don't really have the ability right now to reach out for those funds without discussion again and clarification of where the monies are going and how they're being used. As Addie said, in a work plan, we should be able to predict in a quarterly or a six-month period how much money I can use, how it's going to be used, and then what is the benefits of that.
Right. Could I be recognized?
Certainly, Don.
Yeah, I think this is really a very thoughtful approach. I do want to say that I do recall, Brian, very well, that the chair of the PNB Finance Committee was a little concerned that this motion had not been processed through the Finance Committee, and it came out of a kind of a very strong, almost emotional, a commitment that many PNB members have to the archives, and the sense that we were treading water on really appropriating sufficient funds for the archives. So even though it was not processed through finance, the Pacifica National Board is the ultimate decision maker on these issues. So it was a legal and binding motion. Now the question is, as you say, how does the board's action fit in with the network-wide financial crisis? So I think it would be good to remind the board that they actually passed a package of $150,000, but that the archives is not asking for that. What they're asking for is for us to remember that we passed that motion, and that you're going to be probably coming in with some kind of a proposal, and asking for some of that money to finance a proposal that you're going to be making over an assessment and how to move forward and what's needed and whatever, you're thinking of. So, I mean,
baby steps is all I can say. All I can say is I don't think the foundation can do anything other than letting me take baby steps.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt there, Don.
No, not at all. But all I'm saying is I think this weekend I need to remind, and I think Dr. Bethune, Evelyn Bethune and Rip Robbins and A.C. Byrd and others, all of us need to remind the board that they have made this commitment to archives and that that money has not been, distributed, but that the archives is developing an approach to come back to the board and to take advantage of portions of those funds that were appropriated. And if it's done in a baby steps approach, that's fine, because I know it's not just like send us the $50,000 and we're going to, use it. You're going to want to, plan well for it and so on. Plus, some of these other grants may be actually much larger funds. I don't know what the Grammys are giving you, but they ought to be giving you more than $150,000.
No, we're only looking at small.
Right. Right now, Don, not only because what the organizations put out, but the archives, again, our resources, what we can match, what we can handle, what we can actually put out in the timeliness. The Grammy, we were fortunate to get $39,000.
Okay.
The first two Grammy grants, we did it in a single year of $39,000 grants, and it really sort of, you know, kicked us. We really had to, you know, sweat tears to get the work done in time. This time we took the $39,000 and spread it over a two-year period so that we had the, so that we could commit ourselves to know that we could do the work within all of the other fundraising activities that we are sort of engaged in, that are giving me a bit of a headache right at the second. So that's that. The National Endowment for the Arts gives $15,000 for a year's worth of work, and we match $15,000 equal to what they give us. So not only do we get 15, we actually have to pay 15 and then do the work that's prioritized by the grant application. So they're modest, and they use the resources that we have. We can't really handle much more.
What they do mostly is to prioritize the work of the archives towards preservation.
Right.
And that's really critical. And so now we're trying to reach beyond that and actually be able to, you know, expand and accelerate the preservation work. But in order to do that, every year we're looking at a smaller funding base. So we need to be able to increase that fundraising and not be in competition with the stations.
Right, because wherever we do it within the network, it sucks the funds from somebody else, which we know we don't want to do. But I think that the archives, the work that we've done, the preservation work that we've done, the programming work that we've done, really is at a point where we're positioned best to make that money outside of the network. With the BBC, we're premiering this Thursday on the BBC. We had a little postponement the last meeting we had. But the From the Vault will be premiering on the BBC Radio Live 5 this Thursday, 5:30 Pacific time.
Cool.
And there's a way to stream it or something. But it'll be fabulous. And hopefully we'll have that web stream and actually start getting international funding. Now, I can give you some good news for the moment. We have, as Addie said, we're ahead of schedule with our NEA grant, and we have just sort of posted the public access database, meaning the public can access the records of what our collection is, and we sort of have it in our own house, which is really, really important that we can control it and we can update it without paying a proprietary software company an annual large fee. So we're saving the company, our company, a large regular fee from proprietary software companies so we can own it ourselves. So that's really good. Now, the next part of that, and Addie, you don't know this yet, but we have a little counter on it now. So we can track what kind of people are researching our collection.
Uh-huh.
And we've got pretty high hits, but we're seeing that people from Israel, Turkey, Japan are researching our materials.
Wow.
That's really,
really,
really good,
exciting.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that is really exciting. Yes. That's great. So that's something that Jim is doing?
Yes. Jim Taylor just sent us an email, so he put it up there so we can actually see how things are going.
So you guys, this is one of those things you can't appreciate because it just all has to do with technical stuff and roadblocks and complications, but having achieved this, it really took us years, and it's really a thrill.
Right. And I think the best way to sort of explain is when I came in the door of the archives in 99, the only way to access these records was on microfiche that you had to order, and you got a big stack of microfiche that you would have to take to a library to look at on a microfiche machine to find the record of the program before you called the archives. That's the way they sold some of the revenue way, way, way back was selling the microfiche stacks to education resources and libraries and such. So now we have that information that really was exclusive to people who somehow knew that this existed, an order of the microfiche, now to where people in Turkey who are at their desk can research our materials like a scholar.
Terrific.
Hooray! All right, so I did take us on a tangent, but I think we're going to want to get back to this idea of the motion. I don't think the board is ready to make a motion, Don, but I think that if we have the opportunity in my presentation and the Q&A to just sort of discuss the approach that we're trying to take with this, mm-hmm. I think that somehow you can lead the board into, like, at least acknowledging or showing that the will of the board is being served by our work and our decisions.
Right.
I don't know how better to explain it. Hi, Teresa.
How are you?
Well, thank you.
Sorry for the delay coming on, but, you know, everybody's running around trying to get petitions signed tonight. And
oh,
I was
boy, that's happening here, too.
I'm going to leave you for just a moment. I'm going to see if I can postpone my next appointment. All right,
hey, Teresa,
so.
James Allen would like your signature.
Oops.
I got James Allen over here. He'd like your signature.
Do you need? You still need signatures there?
Yes, we do.
How many does he need?
Well, he needs at least two or three, at least. More would be better. Mm-hmm. I got him about 12 right now.
Hello? Hello?
Hello.
So yes, he's got 12 right now.
I don't know that I can help you at this point from where I am.
Okay.
Sounds like maybe not.
I've already sent. Did Tom Yeager come in yet?
I don't know.
No.
There's been quite a few people here.
Okay.
Hi everybody. I'm back. I can give us another 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
So where are we?
Okay.
We're in Texas or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting a live feed.
Where are we on the agenda?
Yeah, well, or do we have an agenda exactly?
We actually didn't really have an agenda.
We hijacked the meeting.
but it's been a really good discussion.
Yeah, it has been.
Brian?
Yes,
I'm
back.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the upcoming Fun Drive Day.
Ah, yes, thank you. So November 27th is the Archives annual
Tuesday.
Tuesday. November 27th, yes, Tuesday. And we're going to be going from 6 a.m. East Coast time to 10 to 11 p.m. East Coast time, 19 hours. Again, it's a single day. And we're working with Eileen Javar from KPFA, one of Larry Bensky's producers. Lucia Chappelle from This Way Out, Addie's part of our team of producers and organizers, and of course we have our archive staff and our lovely new producer that I don't know that some of you did meet when you were here at the last board meeting in Los Angeles, Haunani Singer, who's been working on From the Vault quite a bit, is part of our production team. So some of the highlights.
How do you spell the first name?
Haunani. Oh, I get this wrong. H-A-U... N-A-N-I.
Okay, and last name is Singer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we call her Nani, and that's okay.
All right.
Right. So the team is put together. We had our first kickoff meeting a week and a half ago. So we did some really great brainstorming and are sort of, again, looking to preview the 1968 preservation project that Addie and I have been working on for the past 6 months. You know, doing public service announcements and previewing what will happen next year on Pacifica Radio and on the affiliates of, again, public service announcements, commemorative programming for the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. Some really exciting stuff that people wouldn't expect, like Ayn Rand speaking about the Columbia University strike in 68 on WBAI.
Cool.
Eldridge Cleaver in Algiers, Czechoslovakia being invaded by Russia. We've got quite a lot of materials. So the more we're able to do between now and November 27th, we'll be able to preview that. Let's see, Addie, you can jump in. We're going to have a feminist hour. We're collaborating with the Feminist Majority, who's having their 20th anniversary December 1st. We're collaborating with them on a feminist hour, past, present, and future, I guess you can call it, with a DVD of Global Majority, a DVD about a short film about George W. Bush's attack on women globally, produced by the Feminist Majority, and it's quite stunning. And they've donated that and copies, subscriptions of Ms. Magazine to us as premiums. We'll be focusing on the Black Panther Party tapes. We'll be focusing on Iraq as related. Oh, all right, Addie, you're better at this
one. Yeah,
we were
looking at Iraq parallel Vietnam.
Yes, Vietnam paralleling Iraq.
Because we've got all this wonderful material. We've got a lot of Cy Hirsch right after Malai, which was, you know, nobody else had that kind of stuff, and it would be so much fun to have him on talking about those parallels, which he's very conscious of. So we're looking at a lot of our Vietnam material and trying to think about to figure out how to work that and make it really today.
Okay. We've also discovered something very akin to what we found with Tolstoy's War and Peace reading. A few years ago, which was quite extraordinary, and we're really proud of the work that we did about that, as well as the funding that it did. But we discovered the Nixon White House tapes, which historically, I'll try to say this as briefly as possible, when the White House tapes were released that included the smoking gun materials, I think, KPFK had them shipped on a Friday to KPFK in Los Angeles by Monday. And again, this was before FedEx and faxes and all kinds of that. So,
you said KPFK sent it to KPFK?
Yes, KPFK had the transcripts from Washington, D.C. sent
from
to them.
There was a Washington Bureau.
Right, but there wasn't a Pacifica station. Mm-hmm. The WPFW wasn't there yet, but there was a Washington Bureau. So they had the transcripts over, you know, sent to KPFK. And on Monday, only, you know, the first weekday next after they were released, KPFK read them on the air in their entirety with a map of sound effects that were expletives. But here's the kicker. They didn't just have anybody read them. We have recordings of Harry Shearer, Christopher Guest, Patty Duke, John Astin, Avery Schreiber, Ann Mira.
Oh, my God.
And what I think is the most extraordinary thing, Mama Cass Elliot reading H.R. Haldeman from the White House tapes.
Wow.
We may indeed have the only recording of Mama Cass Elliot doing anything other than being interviewed.
I grew up on the Mamas and the Papas.
Absolutely. So you might know this, Don. Do you remember, I mean, this is just something that sort of gives me chills. I know Mama Cass is the singer. She went to festivals.
Oh, God.
She was part of the hippie generation. She certainly did interviews on television.
Yes.
And she was a personality of, you know, beautiful proportions.
Yes.
But I don't know that she really took activism seriously to the point where why would she have come to KPFK Studios to read H.R. Haldeman's White House tapes? It's just one of those things that's just edgy enough to be a headline. For
well,
PR.
You know, there was a kind of a mentality that was centered around people like Peter Paul and Mary and others.
Pete Seeger, right?
Pete Seeger. So Cass Elliot, Mama Cass, she was political. But, you know, they were all political. You couldn't be in the role she was playing and not be, you know, political. So it doesn't surprise me at all.
Right, so that's one of the things that we found, and luckily enough, Lucia Chappelle, who's on our team, was one of the producers that called every Hollywood person they could find in 1973 to get them on the air. So we have the original producer helping us produce, hopefully, a revisit of that, you know, a rewind of how does a media outlet like Pacifica respond to something like the White House tapes. Nobody else in the world did it like Pacifica did, and we're really proud to be able to represent that. And other than that, you know, same, you know, many hurdles, as always, in getting this kind of production together. I know for radio stations that do this every day or quarterly or five times a year, even though it's difficult, it's particularly challenging for the Pacifica Archive staff because that's not what we do on our regular daily basis.
It's also like expanding the production base to like 12 people.
Yes.
You know, it's not like there are hundreds of people there.
Right. So I'm just expressing my
Exciting.
It's very exciting.
I have to leave the call for just a moment, but I'll be right back.
And then the other challenging part, but also the rewarding part for both us and Pacifica, is the fact that we only use archival material, both as programming and as premiums. We, have delved into books and DVDs when felt appropriate, but honestly, the money that we make on the Archives Fund Drive is mostly from archival material, both in premium and in broadcasting. Now, that's the challenge of how does an executive director of the production programming, I have the responsibility of putting out a national 19-hour production, which doesn't really happen in Pacifica world. If you guys can tell me who else got had to do two-day marathon broadcasts, let me know. But
right.
It's very, very difficult. The responsibility of what we have to tell the listener. I'm still thinking about the cars that drive by me. We know that in our world we love the White House tapes, but what is my responsibility to release those White House tapes to the guy that's driving by me right now? And what it is, it's the relevance of George W. Bush using executive privilege in the White House now to do basically the same thing. So we have to find the right key, meaning Amy Goodman or somebody strong enough to be able to turn the key to make that White House tape come alive again and make it not only exciting because it's Mama Cass and I want to buy the premium, whatever it is, but also that the people who don't care about the premium are there to listen to the relevance and the importance of what Pacific has done, and also that history does live again. And without that White House tape, maybe we can change the world for a day.
Bravo.
All right. Now what?
Well, let me pitch in. I think that it's a tremendous task, and I hope that you have people that brainstorm with you and come up with lots of creative ideas, as creative as possible, and as big a rainbow of people to help you with the project as possible, and so you don't have to go crazy.
The more we've got, the more of a management task it is. Let us please not forget that.
Yeah. But Addie, did you have anything else to say about the team or any of the subjects we're looking at? Did I miss something?
I've got the big concern about hoping that there are people on this call who can help us with the station.
Okay. If you would clarify that would be helpful. Or if you want me to clarify it or jump in, I can.
Or whatever. Do you want me to start?
You start.
What you might do? I want to get in queue, too.
Yes, please. Because, the thing is how can you guys help us make the stations aware that this is happening? Think of it as a positive thing. And really help us be able to inform the people that we have to inform at the stations, both in terms of people whose airtime is going to be co-opted and in terms of people who would be really great to participate in the program stream. And we don't have that many, tentacles out there.
Right.
Let me discuss that, too. This weekend, we have a Nuestra Palabra, the Latino writers having their say program, which has been on our radio since 1998. They coordinate locally the 5th annual Edward James Olmos Houston Latino Book and Family Festival at the Convention Center. They have 30,000 people that will be attending, and they will have Anthony Romero, the ACLU national president, speaking about his book, for example. you had a tape that had to do with something to do with, you know, labor rights, you know, what's his name, the from California, the labor...
Cesar Chavez?
Yeah, Cesar Chavez, or something to do with Latin culture. I would think that, like, you might tell... tell our national board, I mean, tell our station general manager, we have this. Do you recommend any local personalities to weigh in on this, you know, this part, this segment of the National Archives? And if he gives some suggestions, perhaps you can pick and choose some people that might be of use to you. I mean, none of them may pan out, but there might be somebody like Jim Hightower. Doesn't have a show. Well, he has a show that we play on our station, but maybe we could hook you up with Jim Hightower, who might speak to some of the of your archives. If there's, if you can tell Dwayne, we have these segments. Can you think of anyone in Texas that you might have connection with from speaking that might want to come on the radio and help pitch or something? I mean, Jim Hightower's a very clever man, fun to listen to.
He did an hour for us last year and did the show on Molly Ivins for our fun drive last year. He's great, but I haven't spoken to him since.
But if you tell Dwayne what you have, he might be able to give you some suggestions to, you know, for people that could have a national voice that would be of interest.
Right. Okay, so at the PNB, we have that sort of operations council meeting, and part of that agenda is for me to sort of give the GMs the preview of what we're doing.
Great.
Ask them, you know, and actually Eileen Javar, for Bonnie's purposes, as well as everybody else's, Eileen Javar I'm inviting to the group as well, so they can see that there's a human being doing some of the work that I did last year. But, you know, what we really need, and here's the kicker. This is the one thing that Brian knows that not too many people know about fundraising on the Archives Day, is that, you know, the marathon, we only have 19 hours. If we assume the regular listener, everyday Tuesday listener is going to be listening, we'll never meet goal.
Mm-hmm.
What we have to do, what I cannot stress enough, is promotion.
Yeah.
We must get every single person we can reach, however many ways we can reach them, web radio, interview, print journalism, magazine articles, whatever, excited about the White House tapes. If we can get the poetry people excited about the poetry hour and listen and buy, then we can do that.
We didn't mention that. That's our favorite thing.
All right, let me finish my point, and then I'll let you let the news go. I'm sorry. All right, so it's all about promotions, and we desperately need the stations to be sure that those audio promos get aired as soon as they get them. We've had problems in years past.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have the station's websites post the information about the Archives Fund Drive Day as soon as they're, like a week, I think our rule is sort of a week after their fund drive ends.
Right.
The fall fund drive.
These are places where we really need your help.
Right. I mean, I know that your advice is for me to go to Dwayne, but I'm telling you.
Really, we know
that
it's honest.
We do need you to help nudge the other people at the station.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
really
I can't tell you how many people, and, you know, Bonnie and Addie were with me last year, and they know that we did our job, but that the station still didn't have a lot of the information. We still didn't get a lot of the promotion.
It takes a lot of work, and people need to know. I mean, we're not going to really know who normally would be in each time slot.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know who, you know, has a really, you know, very involved local audience. And you guys do know that at your stations, and it's really taking that down to that level.
Mm-hmm.
That's going
to
make
I'm
it work.
I'm about to leave the station. Do you want me to nudge anybody on my way out?
Yes.
Sure. Nudge left and right. Left and right.
You know.
But you know, I hope you understand what we're trying to say. You know, even you know, as Bonnie said, your local programmer. I think there's a what's the gentleman's name that does the prison radio project in Texas?
Ray Hill.
Rahill. You know, he's an archive guy. He understands our thing. He knows what the archives is about. He's one of the founders.
Mm-hmm.
All we need him to, you know, we need to be able to get him to know that
early
our day
enough.
Is Tuesday the 27th, so that when he's on the air the week ahead, all he has to do is say, you know, radio, Prison Radio Project people, if you have time to listen next Tuesday, the archives is the day you want to listen.
Mm-hmm.
We need those programmers to introduce our fund drive to their audience for us.
We really need that. It makes such a huge difference, you guys. We can tell
from the
phone calls that come in.
This is what I think needs to be done. I think that the program director and the and Robin Lewis, who orders the premiums, and she's most acquainted with them.
Great.
Between the two of them, they need to assign a script to every show.
Great.
The two weeks prior to the event, each one of them needs to promote something that fits with their listeners. Like Robert Muhammad, who is with the Nation of Islam, who frequently talks about social justice, and it just came back from Jenna, Louisiana. They need to find something on that day that fits with his message that he can say, you know, I know you're all interested in this. I think you'll be interested in listening on Tuesday at such and such from this item from the archives. And each programmer needs to have an assignment.
Yes. Now, that's exactly right. So what we need is the help to know who the programmers are that need to be contacted. And we also need help with, you know, if we just send memos out to the program directors or to the couple of people whose names we managed to get, that's not going to be effective enough because we're not going to have the opportunity to really have enough of a dialogue. And we, you know, we really need to have enough conversation to be able to say, okay, what would work? You know, we've got this idea about what would work with
your
audience.
That's why you need to talk with the program director and have the program director give an assignment to each programmer in advance. And
so what I'm saying is I think we need some help from you guys to help us in our conversations with the program directors.
Then what it would be
right.
good
because
for
it
you
just
to
isn't effective
then
enough.
What you need to do is write down some of the footage.
Yes.
Some of the subjects of the footage.
Yes.
And number them.
Yes.
And send it to us.
Yes.
And then we will pick, let's say, okay, this footage that our program director should assign to these five different programmers. And this poetry footage should be assigned to these programmers. And this music-oriented footage should be assigned to these programmers. So, and then have the program director argue, well, no. But it's a given. Everything's going to have an assignment. Every programmer is going to have an assignment to get into it, to immerse themselves in at least one of these archival,
bits. Hey, y'all, I have to run.
That they can give a little pitch in the course of their program.
Yeah. Thanks, Teresa. Right. Hey, you guys, I do have to leave now. My time is up. But
Brian,
thank you all so much.
Brian,
for you,
so.
All right, now you get to tell them the good news about you know what.
Yes, I will.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Enjoy,
okay.
Everybody. Bye.
You know, bye.
So I know that we actually can take that as an assignment to fill some of that and be able to get that out to you guys. But we need to know that we have to find some way to figure out how to work that further from your end. But we could take seriously getting that stuff together at an earlier stage and getting it to you.
Can I jump
sure
in for a second?
Mm-hmm.
From a station standpoint?
Yes, please.
It actually has to come through the programming department.
Yes.
At KPFA, there are 200 programmers.
Uh-huh.
And the program director has to be able to kind of allocate things.
Uh-huh.
And as much as I think everybody's enthusiasm is great and doesn't hurt,
uh-huh.
You really have to realize that you have to get some of your
lead on this stuff from the programming department.
Right.
Promos don't just get scheduled because people are enthusiastic.
Right.
And frankly, and I don't mean to be chiding, but as you know that we've discussed this a lot of times, Addie, a reasonable length of time to be getting this information to the radio stations is a month ahead. A slightly reasonable amount of time is 3 weeks ahead.
But okay, well, we can do something. You know, I think we could pull that. You know, Eileen is really a producer.
Yeah, I know that. And she knows a lot of this.
Yes.
So that's going to be really, really helpful.
Yes, it's really helpful. It's just I want to be able to, you know, be as clear with her back and forth on the, you know, on the lined paper.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that she could take it from there, but I don't want her to be overwhelmed either.
Right.
I think we're all right. I mean, I think we could do this. So 3 weeks ahead.
Well, yeah, because, you know,
that's
it
fine.
Gets to them. They're all really backed up with a million things every day.
Right.
In order to get it on the websites, it
yeah.
needs to go to the web director, who's also backed up.
Right.
And he has to kind of, he or she has to get it into the proper stream. And
no, I totally get you. If we've got 11 hours together at 3 weeks ahead,
and,
right?
And
we
schedule a lot of our promos and things like that weeks in advance.
Right.
And that's how they get online.
So how many weeks ahead is the traffic log?
Melinda Alley-Dunn, KPFT.
Hi.
Hey. There's no time that's too early, you know,
okay.
because...
May I,
even
may
if you
I
send it a month ahead of time, they're not necessarily going to slap it on the air the next day.
I know, Eileen, I can pull together like 7 to 9 hours, you know, in terms of description.
Yeah.
You know,
if you were to get that to the program directors, they could begin to think about who within the staff or within the listening area
right.
or kind of well-known names
right.
might be conducive to working on a particular hour.
Right.
I just asked somebody. Tony Diaz.
Hi.
Hi.
So,
well, my question for you, Bonnie, and also for you, Addie, is what do you think that this committee or this task force can contribute to this?
Well, I think, can I just say what I think, which is probably different than what... funny things.
Well, let's get them both. Let's get them both.
Okay.
Anyway. So the thing is, we will get our materials to, like, the program directors, okay? Sending things to the program directors in various forms by various means of transmission multiple times does not necessarily mean you get their attention. And by that, I don't mean
correct.
Anything bad about them, you know? It's just not the top thing people have to worry about. So having somebody in the station, having that as their concern to see whether or not, you know, that communication has actually come full circle is extremely helpful. Another thing is that if anybody has ideas about what programmers, especially what programmers who happen to usually be around on Tuesday, but, you know, what programmers might really have some feeling, some real serious feeling for some of the programming that we're going to be able to present, that's not the kind of thing that we can know. I mean, I know that about, like, my local station, and I know some of that historically about most of the other stations because I've been at most of them at some point in history, but I don't really know what's going on now, you know?
Well, I would like to suggest, I'm assuming that you're sending all of this information not only to the program director, but you're sending it to lsb@kpft.org.
Okay.
And you're
great
sending it to,
idea. Okay.
And you're sending it to PC, which is programcouncil@kpft.org. We work real close with the program director, real collaborative
great.
Relationship. So if you send these announcements in advance to them.
Oh, thank you.
Then that would help.
That's great.
This
yeah.
is Don White. Could I make a quick comment?
Sure.
Yeah, you know, Brian, are you still on the call?
No, he's gone.
Okay, well, it seems to me that in Berkeley during the PNB meeting, this meeting of all of the GMs, program directors, some of the operation people and so on, is a time, and actually Brian told us he had an agenda item on that meeting.
Yes.
It's where all of the people come together. It seems to me a meeting, Brian should request of GMs and PDs to have a liaisons person in every station. I'm absolutely positive at KPFK, Armando Godinho would identify probably Jennifer Kaiser as a liaison, and then the archives people will be able to relate directly to Jennifer at KPFK and say, this is what we need. You know, she has a distribution to all programmers,
mm-hmm.
and in every station there should be this key person. It seems like there should be a liaison person at every station that's identified at Berkeley for Brian and Addie, so that they have someone who's committed to distributing this stuff and making sure programmers know how important this is to the foundation and to the network and to all of us. So if Brian were on the call, I would really encourage him to identify these key liaisons persons. And Addie, are you going to be in Berkeley?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I think that might be really important. There are people in every station who are kind of the movers and shakers,
yes.
you know, who can make things happen and who know how to distribute information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That needs to happen.
No, that's great. That's terrific. We definitely will do that. We've got to do that. So definitely nudge us if you see that we're what I'm afraid of in happening in that meeting is that a lot of the time will be taken up by, you know, the usual God knows what.
Let me ask you another question. Have you analyzed where the donations came from?
Yes.
Do you know which areas of the country were not
absolutely
promoting it?
Yes.
Can you tell us?
No, I don't have stuff in front of me right now.
Okay.
But we can share that. You know, Sean Dellis at the Pacifica Radio Archives actually, you know, did a total analysis. So we completely have that.
I hope that you share that with the general managers. I hope that that you come in with the approach, we didn't have very much enthusiasm in the Washington, D.C. area or the Houston area. I don't know whether these shortcomings from these areas were because they were afraid that if they promoted it that they would have less loyalty to the station when it came
mm-hmm.
to giving,
mm-hmm.
or whether they were just exhausted or they were disorganized or
right.
what. But maybe focus in with them and maybe try to analyze more carefully with them how they can pull the numbers up, or maybe give people a goal to actually
uh-huh.
change it. I mean, unless you can look them in the eye and figure out what it is that you know caused the shortcoming. I mean, if there was a problem that you feel you didn't have support
uh-huh.
in Houston, I hope you'll tell our national directors, or I hope you'll tell us here.
Okay.
So we can do something about that.
I will definitely pass that on. We do have that data now, and some of it's, you know, there are some subtleties of it that are obvious. You know, just because program was on as a natural audience for some stations and not for others, you know, with the
right.
time frames and
right.
stuff like that. But that's, we'll definitely do that. That's really a great idea to just be, you know, straightforward about that
mm-hmm.
and try to work it out.
Let me ask you another question, which has been on my mind. We might never come to this point. How many of the stations are taking from the vault right now?
Oh, that's not me.
Does
I mean, I'm not the person who has those answers.
Does anybody know?
I'm sure. But it's just that, you know, From the Vault is a production of the Pacific Radio Archives.
So
and
my question
I'm the director.
I know we take the half-hour version here in Houston, and I'm trying to do something about that. Does KPFA take From the Vault?
Nope. You know what? Sean and Brian will know that. They know that. I don't, because
I mean... Does Don White know that? Don, do you know if he takes From the Vault?
Well, we've used From the Vault. I don't know a at the present, I hate to say this, it's embarrassing to say it, but I couldn't actually tell you authoritatively how KPFK is using that now.
I know that KPFA, we use pieces, or we might use an episode. We don't have a set time that it runs. And we did use the set extensively during the last fund drive.
And
yeah, I know
effective.
That KPFK has used From the Vault, you know, extensively. But I, at this moment, I'm sorry to say, I can't really see how that's.
Well,
how it's being used right now.
Well, I know that KPFK has a slot for it.
Yeah.
I don't remember when it is.
But
that's,
you know,
it.
Does
I can't.
Anybody know if WBAI or WPFW?
Yes.
Have
you
it on
mean
the
anybody here? I don't know, but it's really easily obtainable information from the archive staff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe this should be. I'm hoping that if there's stations that are not carrying it, that Brian should bring that up at the meeting with the general managers, because it should be, it, you know, it's valuable information that shouldn't be just held until pledge drive. I'll never forget when I heard Alan Watts in the middle of the night driving home. And,
yeah.
You know, and we have this mentality here in Houston, oh, well, we have to play music in three-hour blocks each. You know, so it's actually 6 hours of music in the middle of the night, and I'm thinking, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, we have such valuable archives. They could be played in the middle of the night, and I think they would be of interest to people. So I just don't think we should hide our archives under a bushel basket, and we should keep a steady pressure or steady attempts to persuade the stations to take From the Vault and give it a regular time and play it on a weekly basis.
Well, I think it's important to bring that up, and that's a kind of a national programming issue. And
well, I think it sets up the national fundraising day for the archives beautifully.
Well, that's why the program actually exists in the first place.
Well, I heard the Quentin Crisp. I had a copy of the Quentin Crisp CD, and I don't think I ever listened to it. And then I heard it on our Queer Voices show one night, and
it's great. Isn't
it was awesome.
Yeah,
it was awesome. And
it's
I'm thinking,
one of the best programs.
Oh man,
in the series. So let me tell you guys the good news. Okay, so the thing we're most excited about is that it turns out that at City Lights Bookstore in North Beach, there's actually a direct link there from the station to KPFA. That's how strong the relationship is. And so we are going to have some kind of, you know, gala event broadcast that's going to emanate from Kerouac Alley outside of City Light Books that all the City Lights publishers are really excited about. So that's our big treat.
Cool. You mean during the fund drive day?
Uh-huh.
Awesome. Is this the poetry news? Or was it additional poetry news?
This is the alternative publisher, City Lights Books.
No, but earlier somebody, Brian and Addie or somebody, was saying, oh, what about the poetry? Tell them about the poetry. Is this what you were thinking about?
Oh, I guess so.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good show.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, actually, we've got a lot of poetry news because we've been working on a lot of partnerships with publishers.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's really going well.
Anybody got anything else? I think we are small but mighty tonight.
Yes, absolutely.
if not, what do you guys think about adjourning sometime soon?
I would favor that, but I would like to say, is there someone that we should contact at W and I? Maybe I should try to do that in the next week and encourage them to get with Brian so they can be up to speed on this information about the fundraising day?
That would be great.
Sure. Alonzo was on the call earlier.
Okay.
I'm still here.
Oh, Alonzo's
hi.
Still here. Sorry.
Well, I can't.
I agree also with increasing political type comment on midnight radio, because a lot of people don't know they exist, and they'd be excited about stuff they don't know anything about.
Right.
Okay. I think that what we should do is, like, I have a board meeting tomorrow, a local station board meeting, and I'm going to, in my report, mention the fundraiser coming up. Can we mention any of these things, or do you want to leave them as like a surprise? How can I prime the pump or get it started tomorrow?
Oh, that's such a Brian question. Bonnie, help!
I don't think it. I mean, it doesn't hurt to just report in that soon you're going to be going to the stations, and certainly at the PNB meeting this weekend in the Operations Collective session, that I think you're going to be trying to bring a synopsis of some of the highlights that you've already come up with,
mm-hmm.
And begin to plot this out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that right now it's kind of at the stage where it's really just the basics and the process of putting this together that needs to begin to get out to people.
I mean, definitely the White House tapes, the City Light books, you know, Beat Poets, the feminist, whatever that is,
sure.
The Vietnam, Iraq.
Right.
I know those are like that.
City Light Books is going to do what?
We're going to broadcast from City Light Books with Lawrence Ferlinghetti and other poets who've been, you know, the whole beat poetry movement owes a lot to Pacifica.
Okay. And tell me again, the White House tapes were the Nixon...
Within the Nixon White House, it was, you know, as in the course of the Watergate hearings,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was discovered that he was tape recording everything,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, or certainly a lot of really
so
good
from
stuff.
From D.C. to, they shipped overnight.
Oh, yeah, so they shipped over. So I don't know how they did that, actually. I know what I did back in the day.
What did
which
you
is
do?
That we had to put them, well, we'd put them on Greyhound buses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd put them on Greyhound buses or we'd put them on planes, and then people would have to drive over to the airport
they
to
shipped
pick
it
them
to,
up.
They shipped them to KPFK and
uh-huh.
the archives, and then you had...
No, they shipped them to KPFK.
Okay, and then you had people read various parts.
Yes.
Get different personalities.
Yes, they dramatized the tapes. So, in other words, you know, it was this huge discovery that, like, Nixon had been tape recording
mm-hmm.
surreptitiously
mm-hmm.
his private conversations and his, you know, personal musings about all these issues of state.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when it was discovered
mm-hmm.
and those tapes were handed over as evidence,
mm-hmm.
then some people at KPFK got really, really excited and said, as soon as those tapes were released, you know, so it was possible for the press to get a hold of them,
mm-hmm.
they took them and they...
transcribed them then.
Well, I'm not sure if they were the transcripts or the tapes.
They acted them out.
Yeah. So they had to have made a transcript of them, and then people acted them out. And you said Mama Cass played who?
I think it was Haldeman, he said.
Wow.
But who would know that would be Lucia Chappelle. Who is one
who,
of the producers?
Who are some of the other personalities that we're reading?
I don't remember any of the other names.
All right, but
well,
one of them was Mama Cass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Brian gave us...
Brian gave a long list.
A long list. I can remember a few of them.
Can you mention them?
Well, Patty Duke and John Astin.
Oh,
Patty,
yay! I love memory.
Yeah. And also, Mir, who are the comedy team of something in Mir?
Dora and Mira.
Yeah, that's right. And there were others. It was a very impressive list.
Okay, say the comedy team one more time.
Stiller and Mira.
And Mira.
M, how do you, how, is it M-U-R-R-A?
No, M-E-A-R-E-R. Her name is Ann Mira. She's Ben Stiller's mama and daddy.
Okay, well,
that's,
I'm
yeah, that's Ben Stiller's parents for this generation.
Love,
is
I
it?
Love Ann Mira.
Yeah.
I love Ann Mira. She's the angry Irish woman from New York. She's wonderful. I love that woman.
Okay, well, I'm going to make this announcement at my local station board meeting tomorrow night,
right.
And I'm going to start prepping people for this event. And I hope that you do also make some sort of announcement, kind of like just something funny and amusing and something that makes people want to start talking about this.
Good.
Great. And we'll try to, you know, get together any kind of description we can as soon as possible.
And I think that it's a good thing for people who are on this task force to at least in announcements make one, at least one announcement, at in board meetings, to at least get people thinking about archives.
So wonderful idea.
Well, just picking up where you got the ball rolling there. So I'm going to say goodnight.
I think we might all be saying goodnight unless anyone has
sounds
anything
sounds good.
Else.
So the meeting is adjourned at what time here?
6:51.
Oh, 8:50.
Well, in your life, 8:51.
I have a request, one request. Teresa, I hate to ask this, but can you stay on the call for 1 minute after everyone hangs up? I have a question to ask of you.
Sure, but we'll still be on tape unless John turns it off.
Okay, it's all right. It's all right, because it's not a big secret.
Right,
it's
well,
something that happened earlier in this meeting. You missed it, and I want to just let you know what happened and ask you a question about it.
Okay, okay. Well, I'll let you all go then, and good night.
Night.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Thank
good
you.
Meeting.
Bye, Teresa.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
And what's her name? Melinda, call me in 5 minutes.
What's that?
Call me in 5 minutes.